News Talk, 1230 WFVA. Local news now.
The name of a Hanover County firefighter to be placed on the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial. Lieutenant Brad Clark, one of 92 firefighters honored at yesterday's National Memorial Service in Emmitsburg, Maryland. Many of the firefighters memorialized yesterday died in the line in 2018. Lieutenant Clark was helping work an accident scene on I-295 last October when a tractor-trailer plowed into a fire truck. Name of the Fredericksburg Nationals revealed over the weekend, along with the branding that goes with it. City Councilman Matt Kelly says they got the right team and the right ownership.
I mean, I've been involved in a lot of business deals in the city to bring things here and make changes, but seldom do you have an opportunity to work with such a family as the Silbers, who truly are partners and truly have become members of the Fredericksburg community. I mean, not only bringing the stadium here, but working with the Clean and Green Commission, make sure it's environmentally friendly, you know, talking about, you know, potentially the arts in the city and how they can help with the arts. And they've already become a very, very important part of this community and invest in this community, and I want to welcome them as part of the Fredericksburg community. I think you guys are a great asset and a great help to this community for all that you've done.
Matt Kelly, opening day, April 23rd. I'm Ted Schubel. Here's your News Talk 1230 WFVA Weather Channel forecast.
Clouds here today at 82. Showers likely tonight, a low 58. More rain expected tomorrow, cooler 65. Showers in the morning on Wednesday with clouds in the afternoon, readings in the mid-60s. For News Talk 1230 WFVA, Richard DeWettig at the Weather Channel.
Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. We are talking sports medicine this morning, and Mary Washington Orthopedics, and we have Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. Dr. Richards, it's great to meet you and have you come in. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is a sports medicine is an interesting field, just in that I guess it's wide base. There is the sports component, but right. I guess a lot of what you treat at times, it can happen just, you know, in the course of everyday life.
Right. It's not just sports medicine. It's more of, I did like an arthroscopy fellowship, so treat a lot of conditions, open arthroscopy, and then non-operative too. So, and it's all ages, you know, anywhere from pediatrics up to your 60s.
Yeah. I never thought of it. Yeah, that a lot of these, you can go from kids to senior citizens.
Yep. Yep, different conditions, obviously, for the two different demographics, but you can kind of encompass all of those patients in your practice as a sports medicine physician if you wanted to.
Is sports medicine itself, or at least what it's called, is it fairly new as far as some of the things? I mean, you've been doing this, all of these different things that we'll get into have been done over the years, but maybe not always thought of in the kind of the sports medicine umbrella.
No, I mean, sports medicine kind of originally started, you know, a while ago, back with a lot of open procedures. Arthroscopy is fairly new with surgery, you know, the last 30, 40 years or so. And obviously, what we know it now, it's different from when it started. But, you know, it started treating athletes, and you know, that's where it kind of grew from.
It seems as though, Dr. Richards, this area, just some of the changes... People have some of these injuries, and they're up and at them, and you know, up and you know, back at it a lot quicker than they used to be years ago. You see that with athletes, and you also see it just in, you know, everyday life when people, you know, have some of these kind of things.
Right, and I think a lot of that is sports medicine is not just the physician; it's also the therapists, and they play a huge role in what we do. And I work closely with the therapists, for all patients. And. And a little, you got to take what you see in the athletes, particularly the professional athletes, with a little bit of a grain of salt. They go through things a lot more rapidly than a normal patient would because there's millions of dollars on the line. you know, and, you know, there are higher failure rates if you do an accelerated program. But a lot of what you said is true. You can still get back rapidly, and a lot of that's the therapy protocols that we use.
I'm sure that you do have people. That's interesting that you say that when if someone has a procedure and they'll say, oh, I don't, I know right. somebody on the Redskins had right. that, and you know they were back in a couple of weeks.
Right.
How come you're not?
Right. And that's it's a tough conversation to have because professional sports is a little different than taking care of even college or the general population, and a lot of that's because now the manager is involved in the care. The athletes involved in the care, the coach, the agent. So there's a lot more secondary gains involved in that type of dynamic.
That's interesting. So if you have something similar that, say, someone on the Nationals has, you may not come back as quite as quickly.
Well, and the goals are different, right? So you may want to get someone back for the next season, two, three seasons. My goal is to get you back and never operate on you again. So.
I never thought of the fact that with what you do, you have what you do, but really in the realm as we of sports medicine, really it is the therapists who then, after you do what you do, the therapist really then steps in and takes care of a lot.
Right, and we have you have protocols for every different type of surgery you do, and you go over it with a therapist. A lot of them have been developed, different institutions and kind of passed around amongst each other, tweaked with different therapists and how they see the patients doing. So it is personalized over this generalized therapy protocol, but work very closely with them, and they're the ones seeing the patients, several times a week for the weeks after surgery. I'm only seeing them maybe a couple times.
Yeah.
So they're really kind of getting to know their limitations, their abilities, and then kind of coming up with things that they want to do to advance the patient, maybe pull them back a little bit. Say, your protocol says they should be at this range of motion, but I don't think they're quite there yet. What if we push that 2 weeks from now? So I value that feedback, and that's why I like working closely with them.
How did you get involved in this? Because it's so often, it's so interesting when doctors come through, and there are certain parts of medicine that you just think, why would anybody want to get involved? This is one. I mean, you hate to say fun, but I mean it really is the kind of you're dealing with a lot of things, really a lot of that many of us deal with day to day. How'd you get involved in this?
Well, I didn't always want to be a doctor, first of all, so that was a big decision. I went through all my undergraduate training in engineering, and I thought I wanted to do robotic prosthetic design.
Yeah.
And then I realized, well, I don't know if I want to do the robotics, so I thought about orthopedic implant design. And then that kind of took me down this path towards orthopedics. So then once I was in orthopedics, it was kind of, I liked the idea of having something that I could, treat a wide variety of patients with, my family, give them advice. I didn't
sure.
want to be so subspecialized that I was only seeing, only trauma or something, only spine. So sports I saw as kind of a more wide field with a little wide demographics and a wide type of conditions to treat.
Interesting. It is so interesting because really most people come through and they'll talk about I knew in third grade I wanted to go into medicine and help people. That it is interesting that you went that way around with things.
Yeah, I didn't know until I was 22 or so. So. Had to go back to do a couple prerequisites for med school and then back to med school after that. So I'd already graduated college and everything.
Wow. And that couldn't have been easy.
No, it was a big decision because I was in a PhD program at the time for engineering. And, you get a stipend and your education's paid for when you're in a PhD program. And then you go to medical school where you take out debt.
So, yeah.
And then it's a lot of time. It's 4 years, and then I knew I wanted to do orthopedics, so it's 4 years of medical school, 5 years of a residency, and then, I forget the statistics, something around 98% of the graduates specialize, subspecialize. So then it's another year of training. So at that point that I decided to switch was 10 years of my life towards education.
Wow, so you really have a lot of education. But I would think that the background that you have does help you.
It does, and I think if you look a little deeper, there's a fair amount of orthopedists who have an engineering background. And I think it lends well because it's mechanical. Orthopedics is mechanical. And it teaches you how to problem solve, which is what surgeons do. You have to troubleshoot and problem solve daily, whether it's in the operating room or in the office. So I think it's a good background for it.
Yeah, no, especially with in this line, it too, it seems like there a lot of times there's the problem solving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that definitely helps because it just teaches you how to think critically in a different way. And I think, you know, not saying that every doctor should be an engineer.
Sure.
But I think one of the nice things is it used to be that you'd go through pre-med and then you'd be a biology major and then you go into medical school. But now you're seeing, you know, literature backgrounds, you're seeing philosophy backgrounds, you're seeing engineering backgrounds. I think that diversification of your training kind of teaches you how to look at the world a little differently. So then it, you know, it helps. It's not such a tunnel vision.
Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. We are talking to sports medicine. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We will be right back.
Opinions. We've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. We're talking Mary Washington Orthopedics. Sports medicine is our focus this morning. I would guess, Dr. Richards, that you have, whether it's your friends or family members, anytime something comes up, you twist an ankle, you know, your hip's bothering you, you know, you kind of come to you for advice.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure every doctor you talk to would be the case. It kind of starts in medical school. It kind of becomes fair game as you're starting to learn about it. People are like, my hand was hurting the other day, and you know, you're a second year in medical school. You just took anatomy and physiology, and you try and answer it, but that's just kind of part of the game.
We were talking off air, and this is really fascinating. I guess I've never thought of this, but I guess it's like this with all medicine. Based on what you do, whether it's going to be pediatrics, whether it's going to be, you know, whatever you decide, whatever path you decide to go down, then it becomes that determines how specialized you're going to be, and even where you're going to live, or who you're going to be associated with.
Yeah, I mean, even within orthopedics, there's, you know, multiple subspecialties. There's, you know, spine, trauma, foot and ankle, hand, shoulder and elbow, sports, joint replacement. So there's a lot of different things you can do within subspecialties. And then, you know, there's certain things you think about. You know, if you go trauma, typically you're going to end up at a level one trauma center. That's where most of your stuff is.
So
geographically, you're kind of limited to that. Pediatrics, you're typically tied to a pediatric hospital, things like that. So you got to kind of think about when you're making your decision, where you may want to end up geographically. Is there a need? Some places are oversaturated with physicians and certain subspecialties. And I don't think you should ever pick a specialty based on that because, you know, it's like any business. It kind of waxes and wanes over time.
Mm-hmm.
So
if there's
not a need now, there may be in 5 years, and then you missed out because you went with a need that's needed right now instead of your true passion. So you should always pick that. But there's a lot of different things, and the type of practice also plays a role. Do you want to be a hospital? Do you want to be private? Do you want to be like a combination of the two? Like some are private with academic affiliations. So all of that plays a role.
Where'd you go to medical school at?
So I went to medical school at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia.
Okay. From medical school, then you did your residency then around Philadelphia?
Yeah, so after medical school, you do residency in whatever specialty you go into. Every specialty has residency. Orthopedics was 5 years, and you know, you go through this match process, which you basically put in an application everywhere. They decide who they want to interview. You interview there, and then you rank them all. And then the programs rank everyone that applied and they interviewed, and then they match through a computer algorithm. So then I matched to a place in Camden, New Jersey, right next to Philly, right across the river.
Okay.
And did my residency there.
Okay. How'd you get to Fredericksburg?
So Fredericksburg, my wife is from Northern Virginia, so not too far from here.
Yeah.
And we knew we wanted to end up south. And when I was looking for a job, it was kind of a few different ways when I was looking. I used a recruiter who kind of puts you in touch with practices who are looking. I used the Academy, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons website. I used word of mouth with my attendings. And then a recruiter actually put me in here, and I interviewed with the guys in my group. And, you know, I thought it was a good fit. It reminded me of the dynamics of where I trained, for residency
and yeah.
collegial, so I like that.
You said earlier, or when we first started, did you tell me that what you do is minimally invasive procedures?
Most of it is, but there are some open procedures that you do too. But a lot of it's minimally invasive through two little incisions. You use a small camera, like 4 millimeters, and then little instruments that go in through another incision or a couple little incisions.
But to me, that stuff's just is really fascinating, just of how medicine has come to that, so many things that being done that way now.
Right. Yeah, I think it's, it's nice to be able to do it through little incisions. I think it's not always the right answer. I think sometimes you can do things faster through a bigger incision. It's just not quite as cosmetic that you would argue. But you kind of get to the same outcome, which is why people elect to do a lot minimally invasive. But, before we had that, you're doing rotator cuff repairs just through an open incision.
Right.
And they're actually done a little faster than you can do them through, like, a big massive rotator cuff tear than through a camera, but you get the same results. So I think that's why some of it's market-driven. Some of it's, you can see things in the joint easier with a camera kind of going around in there than you can open. So some of that helps, too.
When a person comes in, say it's a shoulder, and if they describe things to you, do you oftentimes know right away what it is, and the camera narrows it down and confirms it? Do you know on a lot of these things, just certain symptoms indicate a lot of times what something's going to be?
Yeah, most of it you can get from the history, just from talking to the patient, hearing kind of their story, their injury mechanism, if they had one. Sometimes they don't always have one. Sometimes it's just kind of started. And then from there, usually you get a more advanced imaging study, like an MRI. And between the two of those, you have pretty much everything you need. Occasionally, you see some things a little differently when you're in the actual joint looking at it with the camera. And you tell them that if I see something different, I'll take care of it. But you usually have a pretty good idea of what you're going to do. It's not too often that you're surprised when you get in there.
What's the most common thing that you see? Is it knee injuries?
It varies. I guess lately it's been knee mostly, but I guess it just kind of depends on who they happen to get into in the office and what they see. But I'd say knee and shoulder. I mean, particularly I take care of knee, shoulder, hip. That's kind of my focus.
When you're watching a game on TV, when you see an injury a lot of times, when you see an injury sometimes, do you immediately know that looks like it could be serious?
Yeah, you get it from just watching the mechanism and knowing how different injuries occur.
Yeah.
You can kind of tell. You can say, oh, he tore his ACL on that play, and things like that. You can guess. You can make a pretty good guess.
It still amazes me, the injury that Alex Smith of the Redskins suffered last year, which has been a massive injury. And you see, all summer you would see him around, you'd see pictures of him just with this massive brace on, with things coming out of it. And you look at that, and I mean, the play itself to me didn't look all that serious, although right afterwards.
The replay. Right?
The replays, you started seeing. What his knee and ankle look like, but to look at some of those braces and you think, even though you can do so much now with the serious things, it's still serious.
Yeah, and I tell people, the surgery is the easy part. It's the rehab that's the hard part, and it's the aftermath, and it's getting back to the level that you were before the injury. And I think that's one of the challenging things of sports in general. People come to you expecting to be the level they were before they were injured. So you're trying to get them back to that. I think I don't want to undersell the rehab. I think that's one of the hardest. It's definitely the longest part of the recovery.
Yeah. Well, and I guess as you get older too, it just makes sense that it's harder to get back to where you were.
That's partially true. It's also very much depends on the injury mechanism. Yeah. You look at things like the injury mechanism, and then you want to protect. Like if you repair a tendon, you have to protect it. So that it doesn't re-tear, but at the same time it needs to see some forces so that it can heal like a tendon instead of scar tissue. So there's a balancing act that you do with the therapist to get motion without you know, too much strength to stress the repair.
Well, especially with knees and tendons and things like that. I mean, you, if I'm having to deal with you, I'm dealing with you after it happens. I'm sure that you talk about and tell people, warm up and do those kind of things, stretch, and just how important that is. Because I've seen it myself, when you don't do that, you can get yourself into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and there's for the, you know, part of my fellowship training was in pediatric sports medicine as well. So those guys do they talk a lot about an ACL prevention program. It's ACL PEP. And there's actually a website that goes through about a 20-minute warm-up that kids should do, even if they don't have an ACL injury.
Yeah.
And they kind of make them do it if they do have an ACL injury, because if you have an ACL injury, you have a higher risk of injuring your other ACL after surgery if you go back to the same sport that you injured it in. So there's this warm-up that they do, and it's been proven to reduce the risk of ACL injury. So warm-up is important, and it's more to kind of get your body ready for, you know, the competition or the activity that you're about to do.
It's funny because last week it's a haunted house in the area, and I was doing something with them. And I noticed that they all did a warm up beforehand, and whoever the person in charge, she has a military background, and so I was asking her about, you know, do you really need to do this? And she said everybody's going to be moving around, and she said I don't want to take any chances, mm-hmm. and I want everybody to be stretched, and so we don't have any injuries.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is important. I think the warm up is important, and being flexible helps too. I mean, we know if you're stiffer, you're a little bit more injury prone. So
it sounds as though, as we've talked about, just the rehab part, and I guess that is the toughest, to keep people motivated and to do it. But if you don't do it, your chances of ever getting close to what you were are going to be, I guess, would be greatly reduced.
Yeah, rehab is very important. Luckily, in sports medicine, it's not usually, you don't have the problem of pushing them along. You have the problem of reining them back in a little bit.
Yeah, because you want to get back.
You want to get back, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it. So, the rehab is kind of what, you know, there's a little bit with the technical surgical repair, and then, you know, the things you use to repair it. But rehab is important to get the range of motion back, to get your strength back. And, you know, you always hear it in the professional sports, you know, they focus on this hop test for ACLs, which basically looks at your leg strength. And then, you know, is it, you know, 98% of the other one, then they can get back safely.
Cause yeah.
You know, they looked at that too. We studied like everything. So, you know, if it's not as strong, then you're prone to re-injury.
Yeah. No. And you're right. You do hear when people rush back, and a lot of times they can re-injure and do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it's not all. You know, I don't want to give the impression that it's all strength. So, you know, of course these professional athletes get back because all they do is work with a trainer every day.
Yeah.
It's not all strength. There's biology involved too. So you have to wait a certain amount of time for the tissues to heal, you know, before you can even really start really stressing that repair.
Town Talk, financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. Mary Washington Orthopedics, our focus. And we will continue when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
I have the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Mary Washington Orthopedics, our focus, and Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. We're talking sports medicine this morning. This is fun having you in and talking about this, Dr. Richards, and getting your views on this. Now, I see that you, the press release they sent, said you enjoy golf, basketball, snowboarding, and water sports. Some of those seem very dangerous. So, obviously, I just looked at that and I thought, snowboarding?
Yep. I mean, everything has a risk, right?
So that's true, yeah.
You just got to decide what you're willing to risk.
Have you ever had any major kind of injuries?
No, luckily, knock on wood. Just a lot of ankle sprains from basketball. You know, pretty much played my whole senior year with like a brace on the whole time. But other than that, nothing too major.
One of the things, you know, going back to professional athletes, a lot of times, when an athlete gets a high ankle sprain, that usually is really bad, and they can, you know, it's funny that some I've heard different athletes talk about it would be better that I had a break than to get a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, high ankle sprain is not a typical ankle sprain like you would think of if you stepped off the curb bunny and rolled your ankle.
Yeah,
it affects a ligament in the ankle that is a lot more stout, and typically if you break your ankle and you have an injury to this, you get screws or some sort of hardware put across that joint. It happens at a joint.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so hard to get back from.
Speaking of, say, you know, stepping off the curb and, you know, see a step in a hole or go off the sidewalk, things like that that happen to all of us. When do I come to the realization, or should I think I need to have something checked, that there may be something more to this than just, you know, just kind of a normal thing, and then you carry on. Is pain the pain or swelling?
Pain and swelling are always part of it. That's always part of it when people come to see me. I mean, I guess the big red flag would be if you can't put weight on it. If you can't put weight on it, you should, you know, by the guidelines for X-ray, you should get an X-ray.
Yeah.
Like, inability to bear weight is like one of the guidelines to get an X-ray of an ankle sprain. So, you know, that's definitely a reason to go seek care somewhere. You know, persistent pain and swelling, those are all reasons commonly that I see.
I don't know if kids are just different, but I just if pediatric is just different, but I know with my own kids, different times they ended up having either breaks of arms or a lot more serious injuries than we ever thought. For a couple of, you know, it would sometimes be multiple days, and we'd be, you know, put ice on it. You'll be okay. You go in and you find that there's a break.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. And kids, you know, depending on the age, have a harder time kind of expressing what's wrong. So that's part of it. And, you know, they don't quite know. Plus, kids are a little bit susceptible to different injuries. So, you know, whereas we might tear a ligament, kids might break the growth plate. Things like that. So you always have to think about that. Or, you know, we might sprain our ankle and tear a ligament in our ankle. A kid may break their growth plate on one of their bones. So there's a little bit different because they have growth plates.
As far as, do you have a philosophy of care?
I do. And, you know, most of what I see is non-operative. And, you know, I have the luxury of being in a field that's pretty elective. Meaning, you know, it's not life or death.
Yeah.
You don't ever have to have surgery. There's certain instances where I will push you to have it if you have an injury and you're kind of wavering on whether or not you want to have surgery or not. One of which is, you know, we keep going back to ACL tears. If ACL tears at a young age, you should have surgery because we know that the natural history of your knee with an ACL deficient knee isn't good. You go on to rapid arthritis at an early age. So there's certain times where I'll kind of push them, but for the most part, it's a very open dialogue with the patient, kind of going over their injury and the different treatment options ranging from non-operative to operative. And then, you know, if they're still not sure, I'll just tell them what I would do if it was me or my family and kind of let them make a decision that way. Or I'll have them think about it and come back. So
I've been interested in having you come in, just because so often the topics we deal with are so heavy, and, you know, and the treatment is so heavy. And I was thinking that a lot of these you can wait or talk about it, or you know think about it on, mm-hmm. on a lot of these. And in some cases, obviously, if it's an ACL or if it's something that you're in a lot of pain and you don't have a lot of movement and mobility, you have to do something. But with a lot of these, you do have a little bit of time.
Right, you do. You do have a little bit of time. It's rare that you have a really small time window. I mean, with like a rotator cuff tear, you have a time window because the longer, you know, we're talking like several months. But the longer you wait, the more scarred the tendons get, the harder it is to repair them. With an ACL, you know, the longer you wait, other structures in your knee take over for stability, trying to give the knee stability, and you can damage those structures if you wait. And then there's, you know, a few things that are more critical. Like if you have a loose body in the knee, like a piece of bone broke off from an injury and it's floating around. You want to get that out pretty quickly because that has a big risk to damage more structures.
Cartilage. What is I always had thought that when you had damage to cartilage and things like that, that you were really limited in what you can do. But I've heard stories and even know some people in recent years of where they've talked about that there is some restoration that you can do.
There is. There's a lot of cartilage restoration, which I did a lot of training with in my fellowship. It's a specific type of injury. It's a specific age. I think it's FDA approved right now.
Okay.
18 to 55. So for a specific like cartilage, like your own chondrocytes being transplanted back into the knee.
That's what I had heard about that.
Yeah. So that's one of the techniques that I trained on to restore cartilage. And it's got that narrow FDA window. And it also has to be for like a focal defect. It can be a big focal defect, but it can't be this huge regional cartilage loss like you would see in arthritis.
Okay.
No one unfortunately has invented a spackle yet to kind of recoat the ends of the bones. But big defects you can treat, and you can regrow cartilage, your own cartilage.
That I didn't know.
Mm-hmm. So it requires two surgeries. You have to take a biopsy of your cartilage,
yeah.
And then it's through a company based in Boston. So they take the cells, replicate millions and millions of those cells, put them on a collagen matrix, which is like a resorbable scaffold that you then get sent back, and then you template it. It's kind of like arts and crafts. You look at the defect, and you match that shape to this matrix, and then put it back in the knee.
Wow, sometimes medicine is just, it's just fascinating, the things you're able to do now. What a great time to be alive.
Yeah. So, and they're working on how to regrow cartilage more regionally. They're working on how to regrow meniscus, because that's something else we see is a meniscus deficient knee,
right,
where sometimes they need meniscus transplants. So they're working on, a synthetic meniscus that you could put in, but it's not there yet. But the cartilage stuff is. The cartilage transplants are there.
I've only heard about that in recent years, because I know in the past you'd hear about that, and when people would have problems with cartilage, there were little things you could do. There were things to try to alleviate the pain or the discomfort, but it was kind of like, because I remember hearing, it's cartilage and there's not much we can do, but the fact that you can regrow it now and do some of that.
Yeah, there's a few options for cartilage that people don't realize. It depends on the size. That's the biggest thing. If it's a really small defect, you can drill the bone underneath the cartilage to get marrow to bleed. And then that kind of changes to, if you're young enough, if you're a pediatric patient, that'll often change into cartilage, regular cartilage that you have on the under bone. If you're older, it turns into something that's very similar to cartilage, but not quite the same properties. And then, if it's a little bigger than that, you can take little plugs of your cartilage from other parts of your knee that are non-weight bearing and transplant them to that area.
Wow.
And then you can take bigger plugs like that. You couldn't take from your own knee because it'd be just too morbid. You can take it from a cadaver, a fresh frozen cadaver, and put those into the knee. And then, you can do this cartilage transplant.
Of all the things that you do, or we've talked about, maybe some of the things we haven't, is there anything that you like doing? You had to talk about a favorite, because all of these at some point are somebody's problem. But it sounds like there are areas that you really enjoy doing.
I think the cartilage is one.
Yeah.
That's one reason that I wanted to come to this area. I know there's not really much, there's not many options in this area. You kind of have to go to D.C. or Richmond.
Right.
To get someone to do that. But that's kind of a pretty rapid growing area that's getting more and more popularity. So I do like that. And most of it's because, it's kind of like what you said, it's been, I don't want to say an underserved injury, but it's been one that we haven't had many options for in the past. And so this kind of really changes things.
And you said it goes 18 to 55 mm-hmm. is kind of the time for the age frame that you can do that.
Yeah, they're doing, the guys I trained with are doing pilot studies in the pediatric patient, because you have the same problem in pediatric patients where you have this condition called OCD, which is a osteochondral defect. And sometimes that leads to a cartilage defect in a kid if it's unstable. And then you're kind of stuck with the same thing. What do you do? It's too big to use their own little cartilage plugs, like I was saying earlier.
Yeah.
So they're doing some studies. So hopefully you'll see the FDA approve it at a younger age.
Well, just the fact that you're here and that is interesting. That it's another box you can check off of ailments around here that you don't have to go to D.C. or Charlottesville or somewhere else. That things are being taken care of. You can get them taken care of, right here in your own neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. That's definitely a draw, because it's not like even the busiest person doing cartilage transplants is only doing maybe 60 to 70. That's like the busiest person.
Yeah.
So it's not like everybody fits the bill for it. But, even if you do like 10 to 15 a year, that's 10 to 15 that don't have to travel an hour plus to get care.
Yeah. Well, and on a lot of this, and was just even something like that, I guess, whether it's cartilage or any kind of injury, sports injury, or that you have, it's worth checking out to see if there's somebody local that can do something like this. And I guess you know, Mary Washington Orthopedics is a place to look to see if there's someone there, you or others that can match up to what your situation is.
Yeah, my group has pretty much every subspecialty covered. So the things they were kind of missing, I do hip arthroscopy as well. So they have that now. I did basically, one to two days a week all year, I did pediatric sports medicine. So they have some pediatric sports medicine experience now. And then the cartilage transplant. So kind of filled the holes in bringing me down here.
Well, sounds like there's... In this world, and just a few of the things we've talked about, there's more than enough people that have these kind of problems, and in all ages. You're dealing with from pediatrics. We started the show talking about that, from pediatrics to older people. We all deal with this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And the injuries, like we said earlier, they're all a little different, but they get injuries at all different ages.
Right. No, as we sit here and talk, I thought, it's not beyond the realm of possibility that I can go out for a run someday and have something happen, and I'm sitting across from you, answering your questions about how did this happen, and, here's what we need to do.
Right, and that's all, unfortunately, that's all it takes. You step in a ditch and twist your knee, and then, you tear your meniscus. And not all meniscus tears need surgery.
Right.
But it's worth getting it looked at, and then, you kind of go over your options.
It's so interesting when just us normal people run into some of those things. And when I've had friends who've had those kind of things, and like we said earlier, we compare a lot of this to athletes, but that's where we sometimes, I don't know that I've ever heard of meniscus, except in sports. And then all of a sudden you have a friend with it, and you find out you see them go through it, and just the pain of some of these injuries.
Right. Yeah. And that's I think you injure your knee and you don't always know it's wrong, so it's kind of hard to shop around for who the right person is. Then you kind of have to rely on, your primary care doctor or urgent care doctor kind of knowing. And then usually if they get you in the door with an orthopedic surgeon or even, a non-operative orthopedist, they can kind of direct you. So it may take a little bit, but you'll be able to find the right person, even not knowing really anything about the anatomy or possible injuries.
Yeah. Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. Mary Washington Orthopedics, our focus. Town Talk financed by Deakin Wealth Management, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. We will wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Dr. Christopher Richards in this morning. Mary Washington Orthopedics, our focus this morning. Great, just great, real practical kind of stuff. As far as the future of sports medicine with Mary Washington Healthcare, Dr. Richards, it seems like, I would guess it's, from what we've talked about, it's taking off, and there really are a lot more options now available, just with the cartilage that we talked about.
Yeah, I think the field of sports medicine was pretty well covered, you know, before I got here by all the local doctors. But I think the cartilage is the newest thing that's unique to me. And then the pediatrics, you know, I didn't do a formal pediatric fellowship, but I did do pediatric sports. So the sports injuries, those OCDs that I was talking about, that's a pretty common one that people see. So I think those two things will be continued to develop and kind of give an extra treatment option to people in the area.
Well, the other thing, a couple of things I think that we learned today in the what have we learned here segment is that when you, no matter what, after you're done and do what you do, when there's the therapy involved, that really is going to determine, you know, how quickly and how far back you get from whatever your injury is.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of biology involved in the repair or the reconstruction or whatever surgery you had, but the biggest thing is the rehab. And that's what's going to be getting you back the fastest. You know, outside of, you know, a specific set of limitations for the first 6 to 8 weeks, the next several months or however long it takes you is all based on your therapy metrics.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can go through something in 2 months or it could take you 6 months. And so that's why therapy is so important.
And just to stay with it and to do it.
Well, right. And that's the most important thing. Therapy is... it's not a destination, it's an activity. So doing the exercises that they show you on a daily basis, you know, and particularly when I'm treating something non-operatively and they go to the therapist and they get better and then they stop doing the exercises because they feel good.
Yeah.
And then they come back and see me and they're like, well, my knee hurts again. So I think the doing the therapy, even for a little bit every day, is what really helps.
And I guess in some of these injuries that you deal with, it's a situation that you have, you know, to prevent it from coming back. I mean, that may be the change in your life that you need to continually then do these kind of exercises, or your knee is, you know, say your knee is going to, you know, hurt again.
Right, and that's why we touched on it earlier, that the PrEP program, the ACL PEP, which is the warm up exercises to help prevent ACL injuries. You know, that's something that anyone that has an ACL injury, I kind of tell about after the fact, after, you know, they have, once they're recovered, because it's important to prevent, you know, an injury to the other one or re-injury to the knee that they just had surgery on. And it's been proven to help and reduce those injury rates.
Well, and those of us, especially if you're a runner, you know that you start getting, if you've got something on, if you change your stride because you've got, no matter what, something's hurting on one leg or one foot, then that's when you become susceptible to something else happening.
Right. Well, it's all part of a chain. So, you know,
yeah.
So as simple as, like, you know, shoe wear could affect your hip. You can start to get, or low back pain. And that's why running's like a whole separate talk, but, you know, the surface type that you're running on, mm-hmm. changing your shoes out every 200-300 miles, having the right kind of shoe, you know, all of that. Trying to run through a tendonitis is never going to help. That's always going to make it worse. So there's a whole separate philosophy behind taking care of a running athlete. But
and as you get older in anything, I think you do need to stretch and to do things and just for preventative purposes.
Yeah, it does help. I mean, being flexible helps. That's why you see everybody stretching before the football games. And,
yeah.
You know, it definitely helps loosen up so that you're not as injury prone.
Well, Dr. Richards, it's been great to meet you. Thank you for coming in. This has been great stuff. Welcome to the community. And look forward to hearing great things and having you back again sometime. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dr. Christopher Richards with Mary Washington Orthopedics. That is it for Town Talk this morning. Thank you for listening. We will... see you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.